Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Hello, Robbie. Hello, sir.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I see you're wearing your new hat.
I am. Yeah. Yes. Well, this is from Michelle Z.
Yeah.
She sent us these hats. Garrett, you talked about this. I want to thank Michelle. That is such a kind thing for her to do. So I also want to thank another one of our fans and listeners. His name is Nate Lawson. He's from England. He's a robotics engineer, designer. And he sent out a challenge to our Delta Flyers fans. They had designed this robot that cleans windows on the sides of buildings where, you know, it's dangerous, I guess, for people to go, or repairs windows, cracked windows, I think. That's what it did. It didn't just clean, it repaired cracks or nicks or things like that. So they didn't have to go on the side of a building. I put out this challenge, hey, let's name this new robot that I built. And I responded, I said, you should name it the Paris, which would be an acronym for pinpoint and repair in seconds. I thought that was a funny pinpoint and repair in seconds. So he actually, I guess, proposed that to his boss, his company. They did name it the Paris. They changed the last name because I guess it takes more than seconds to do this. So they renamed it the Paris, standing for pinpoint and repair in sequence. So, I got the naming of this. And I want to say, after they came up with that name, he sent me a gift, and it is a piece of glass that is etched and seals some kind of gas so that when you turn it on, the Star Trek logo, and it says the Delta Flyers with the Star Trek logo, and it comes up like it looks kind of like, all right, there, whoops. Well, there's the Paris.
There's the Paris.
There's the Paris. Awesome. For those that are got video on this, that's the Paris. Yeah. It's a photo of the Paris on a piece of glass.
Yeah.
Then looks like that's Nate right there.
There's Nate.
Give a big shout out. Oh, and look, see the gas inside of that glass that I guess his robot repairs, the gas, when you send some electricity to it, it lights up the etchings inside. So it reveals this sort of hologram. It's kind of cool. So he sent a little thank you for that. So
I'm going to take the cue of a future episode where Harry Kim doesn't get a promotion and someone else that we know gets one on the bridge.
Nate Lawson.
And Harry goes, where's my pip? Where's my promotion or whatever, right? I'm going to say, where's my little gift glass?
Where's my robot?
Nate, where's my robot? First of all, when you said pinpoint and repair in seconds, and you said that it takes longer than seconds, I thought the next thing that you were going to say is they change it to param, pinpoint and repair in minutes. But no, they kept the Paris.
They
there,
kept
which
the
is pretty
Paris,
cool.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
And if it was just, it's very cool. There's a robot named Paris. And I was in my weirdo head, I thought, man, could it have been called Kim? And now that I know it's a repairing thing, I thought it was just a cleaning thing.
Yeah.
Right? So,
because I'm not very smart about robotics, so I may have misunderstood it, but it was repair. That's right. I remember he said it fixes damaged windows or something.
Well, if someone makes an automatic robot that just cleans, they should call it the Kim. And then that acronym could stand for Clean It Mofo, is what I would go
clean
with.
Clean It Mofo.
It's clean with a K, a little bit more, you know.
I have one more thank you I want to send out. For a lot of people out there, you guys know that Rebecca and I got married. And Eve England sent Rebecca and I a virtual wedding card, congratulations card. So I just want to thank Eve England and all the fans that sent out their wishes and best wishes and congratulations for our wedding. It was wonderful, little elopement wedding, and we appreciate all the love and support you guys sent. So thank you.
Yes, you sent me some pictures. You guys had to brave the elements out there.
Yes, we did.
Windy, cold, and
just everything.
You know, but you know what? Crazy elements doesn't stop.
No
love.
No, it doesn't. We started. We had a pop up tent from my show, like a tent, no sides on it, so we could see. And we had that just in case the weather was bad, which it was. It started off raining. And then it started hailing. There was hail sleet happening in the middle. The officiant was like, should we keep going? Like, maybe we should go get some cover. But we had the tent, so the hail's coming down. And then by the time we finished, just as we finished, everything cleared up and the sun came out. So we had all the experiences of weather in about 25 minutes.
Yeah, and you've been in Canada long enough. Hail is a big issue.
Yeah,
up here, as I'm sure in certain northern states in the U.S. probably and other parts of the world. But good Lord, like there's always a time that Megan will point something out. She's like, that car, hail damage. She'll point, you know, be sitting on the side of the road with all these dents in there. Yeah, it's like, wow. You don't get your car under cover in hail in Canada, you are in for a shock.
Yeah,
it's like the entire car is just the whole hood, the roof, everything is just. It's horrible.
Dinged
just
up.
Indentation. Yeah. Yeah, completely dinged up. Well, congratulations again, buddy.
Thank you. And here in space, where you're sitting, I see space behind you and next to my Delta Flyer shuttle behind me.
Yeah.
There is no weather. It's always beautiful.
It is always.
It's just
a balmy
69,
70 degrees.
Until the meteor shower starts or the, the cloud of comets that... Okay. Let's go. We're caught up on our gifts and our thank
yous
and all of that. Let's dive into an episode.
Let's go and watch this episode.
Awesome.
And for all of our Patreon patrons, stay tuned for What Do We Remember? Hey guys, we are back from watching False Prophets.
False Prophets, yes. You know, I am just going to jump right at it and say this may be one of my least favorite episodes of the series so far. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
And I didn't remember much about it. I really didn't remember that I had a lot to do because Chakotay and I are down on the planet for a lot of the time. Didn't remember that.
Yeah.
But I got to say, on so many levels, this was my least favorite so far in three seasons, three and a half, or whatever it's been, two and a half seasons.
Wow.
We're halfway through season three, I think, almost. Not my favorite. Didn't like it. We'll talk about it. Not my favorite.
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, what are you rating this?
2.
Ah,
this is a 2. Yeah.
I don't know if I'd go that low, but okay.
Yep.
All right, let's go ahead and start the way we always start. Let's start with our haiku and limerick synopses.
Okay, here we go. The haiku for False Prophets season 3 of Voyager. Fake Ferengi gods. Wormhole to Alpha Quadrant. Crew remains stranded. There you go.
Oh, I envy the days when I only had to come up with a haiku.
I know.
Like every All single right. This is what's so damn funny. Like every single episode of Delta Flyers since I've taken over Limerick, like Robbie and I will go watch and Robbie's always like, okay, I'm done watching. You ready to go back on and discuss? And I'm like, yeah, I'm done too. Just working on the limerick.
Still working,
still working on the limerick. It's like,
20 minutes later, still working on the
limerick. Still working on the damn limerick. Okay, here we go. My limerick for False Prophets goes as such. We track a wormhole which recently disappeared. A nearby planet ruled by two Ferengis that are feared. Holy sages or gods they portray, using replicators to perform miracles they say, ascended to the heavens, the Takarians cheered.
Wow. Wow. You got a lot into that limerick.
Oh, man. I Whoa. Got as much as I could. You know,
you did.
I said, I'm going to cram as much as I can into this limerick.
You and did. That was a very full limerick. Well, congratulations on that one.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about this. Cliff Bowl directed this episode.
He did. Cliff Bowl.
Yeah, always love Cliff Bowl. But I got to say, this was not Cliff's best work. I'm sorry. Mm. Let's just be honest. And he's.
Are you saying that he phoned it in on this one?
I don't know. It was just, it was. I don't know. It didn't visually, it was not very dynamic visually. In fact, it was underwhelming in a number of places. The whole market area of this planet was way underpopulated. Like,
yeah,
it felt like there were 10 extras in the whole scene where you wanted to have like 200 people out there in the crowd. And I know we wouldn't have had 200 extras, but we should have had more than whatever, 10 or 15 or whatever. There should have been 50 people out there. Or it should have been full, and it was not. It was-
And well, also, Robbie, if Voyager was filmed today, CGI is cheap enough that you could fill that entire square.
You could replicate. You know? Yeah, you could do crowd duplication, things like that. Mm-hmm. But there's also ways to shoot, even if you did only have 15 extras, there's ways to shoot it with long lenses and compressing the frame and all kinds of things that Cliff could have made it feel a little more authentically like a marketplace, and it just felt like it felt like you had 10 or 12 people wandering around in a circle. Anyway, not very dynamic. Okay. I thought the script I thought the script was a bit of a mess. Our writer,
well, the story was George Brozak, teleplay was Joe Manosky. So
which Joe's again, I'm a big Joe Manosky fan, but this was not great work. It really wasn't.
All right, well, let's start on the very beginning. We're on the bridge. We're tracking this wormhole. Mm-hmm. Tuvok then detects there is a use of a replicator on an M-class planet nearby. The reason why he discovers that, Janeway sort of makes the decree. Let's see if we can find out what's going on. Maybe someone nearby can help us with this wormhole. And that's when we find this replicator signature, which is very exciting for the fans, because now we know there's somebody here
from the Alpha,
Quadrant. Yep. Yes. Yep. Which is where we want to go.
I love when they're talking about this wormhole that's moving, that it seems to be fixed on the other end, but moving on our end.
Right.
She says something like wagging around the universe like the tail of a dog. I love that line. Oh, I don't know why.
Is that your attempt at Janeway's accent?
Wagging around the universe like a tail of a dog.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
That's not bad.
I don't know why her reading on that line just made me laugh.
Yeah. So you basically talked about a line that Janeway delivers in the science lab. So you jumped ahead a little bit.
Oh, did I?
Because, because we're on the bridge and Harry is assigned to go work with B'Elanna.
Again with the
again, right?
Jeez, yeah. Louise.
Look, B'Elanna is a reality. It's a real thing. B'Elanna is a real thing. Harry and B'Elanna. Paris is assigned with Chakotay. So Pakotay or Charis is assigned to go down to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not a lot of scenes with Pakotay, really. It's the Pakotay pairing is not common.
No, it's not common at all. And especially, I found it interesting that Paris and Chakotay had some conflict in season two. And obviously Paris, the backstory was he was pretending to be this rebel and have all these difficulties, but we never really saw the reconciliation. Like don't really deal with that. By the way, I got to say, I think this was one of the episodes filmed in season two that was aired in season three. I think that this is one of those episodes, along with Sacred Ground, which I directed, my first directing experience.
After the rewatch, do you recall where the town square was shot at, the palace, the temple?
I don't, but remember we were talking about that before we watched the episode, and I do think it was like on another stage that we didn't normally use.
Okay, similar to when we filmed The Thaw with Michael McKean, that was on a stage we never really used. So, all right. Maybe it was that stage.
It could have. I don't think it was that far over. I feel like it was much closer to our regular stages, but it definitely was on a stage different than we normally used. Maybe it was stage 6 or 10 or something, very close to us.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back to the other scene that we jumped over. Mm-hmm. We then after the bridge, we get our assignments. Then we're in the Takar town square, the town of Takar, where we find out about the Song of the Sages. So there's a little bit of singing of the Song of the Sages by one of the guest stars. And we meet who I have called Creepy Shoe Guy. Creepy Shoe Guy comes out and he looks at your shoes and Chakotay's shoes and talks mm-hmm. about how they're very fine shoes. And you can tell a great deal about a man from his shoes, which immediately made me think about my own life. When I was young, I guess my grandfather was criticizing my tennis shoes that I was wearing. Yeah, because he said that no gentleman should be caught dead in any shoes other than leather shoes. Like that showed your status if you had proper leather shoes. And if you wore tennis shoes, which, you know, like canvas Converse Chucks, mm-hmm. those were for peasants. Like if you wear tennis shoes, just not respectable shoes. I do want to say that Tom Paris,
yes,
is dressed like Aladdin.
I love the pants. I'm wearing Hammer pants.
You are wearing Hammer Aladdin/Aladdin
pants. I love
those. So is Chakotay.
Yeah, it's like parachute pants, mm-hmm. MC Hammer pants.
Yeah.
I love the Hammer pants. Yeah. I noticed but that the right
vest,
away.
Yep. Right. The vest and everything. The purple coloring.
It did look like Aladdin.
Very Aladdin-esque.
I love it.
My goodness.
Yeah.
But Creepy Shoe Guy then turns into Creepy Ear Seller Guy. Like, you know, you discover that you have to be wearing an ear mm-hmm. in order to go into the temple. And you guys are like, what? So we don't
I do remember happening. That actor being very nervous. Or I remember when I saw the episode mm-hmm. and seeing that actor, I just had such vivid memories of him. I think struggling a bit with either nerves or anxiety or something. And I remember
really?
Shooting those scenes and maybe because he had so many lines and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. I wish I could, I'd love to find out.
It didn't come off that way though.
No,
like, he didn't look uncomfortable. And the only reason why I call him Creepy, you know, Shoe Guy or Creepy Ear Seller Guy is just the laugh that he affected on mm-hmm. as that character. He had this really kind of freaky look sounding laugh.
I thought he was great. I thought he was really good. And but I did vividly remember, and I'm not sure exactly what it was, that there was just some nervousness or anxiety, or I remember some sort of struggle when we were filming those scenes with him.
Yeah.
That it was that my heart, you know, I felt bad for him on some level, but I don't recall the details of that, but I knew that I feel like it was a kind of nervousness or maybe struggling to remember lines, things like that.
That's
always hard when we had guest stars and they would struggle.
Yeah.
And you just feel like, hey, just relax. Like, you know, just have fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Well, you know, if you think about it as a guest star, you're showing up. It's almost like you're a transfer to a high school, a new high school, where everyone else already knows everybody, you know? And this could have been very well this gentleman's very first guest starring gig.
Maybe.
Period.
Yeah.
Right. And when that happens, the nerves are just, you can't even imagine how nervous you are at that point. Right. It's just like, oh my gosh, I want to do well. I don't want these series regulars to look at me and think that I'm not up to the job, that I can't do my job and this and that and all kinds of stuff. I thought he did a good job and you do too in terms of the final product. Right. But it's interesting that struggle was there. Then we go to the science lab where the immortal wagging the tail line from Janeway comes mm-hmm. out. And of course, Torres and Kim are together.
Mm-hmm.
Halana are together once again. We go back to the Takar town square and we see Rob LaBelle, guest star Rob LaBelle, who was also a guest star earlier on Voyager in the mm-hmm. episode where he played a Talaxian.
Yep.
And he was trapped in the prison of the Vidians, right? The Vidians mm-hmm. were basically experimenting or using all the prisoners mm-hmm. for their parts, and Rob LaBelle shows up again, and that really
well, he was a friend of Ken Billers too,
right?
Wasn't Rob Rob was a good friend. I think they were good friends.
Yeah, I think so. But I just wanted to point out the fact that oftentimes actors are used over and over again. You know, as long as you don't screw up the first time you show up, the powers that be, the producers and writers of Voyager and other Trek shows, keep using different actors. And the great mm-hmm. thing is you can put people into prosthetic makeup and use them again. Because obviously he's not a Ferengi or a Talaxian in this episode. He is a human, a humanoid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now we are introduced to the two Ferengi sages, Erador and Cole. Paris makes a comment about how he doesn't really like this town square. And then after the announcement of the Ferengi and all the women come out, and mm-hmm. Paris has that one line. On the other hand, so that was his remark.
Exactly. As we were talking about before we watched the show, as soon as I saw that the guys come out, I was like, oh my God, yes, that's exactly what it was. It was like so, dare I say, exploitive. It just felt like it was unnecessary. It just felt unnecessary and distracting. And that whole first scene with the low angles and the skimpy outfits, I just thought, why? I don't know. I'm all for like beautiful people, men, women, whatever, like bodies are beautiful and all that. I don't think we should cover up out of shame for whoever we are, whatever kind of body we have. But something about that just felt so like old fashioned exploitation. I was just like, ugh. Yeah. Which is part of the thing, Robbie, that like ruins this episode for me. It's like,
okay,
so many things don't fit. I don't think that was necessary. I think the broadness of performances, sorry, I'm going to go generic for, you know, global for mm-hmm. a minute, but like the performances were way too big, even including mine and Chakotay's down on the bridge. I think Janeway, here's my laundry list. I'm going to vomit it all out. I think Janeway makes a foolish decision. We have a way to get home in the wormhole, and she twists her logic to say, well, Starfleet somehow is responsible for these Ferengis being here. Like, dude, just take care of your crew and you got a wormhole. Like, if it weren't for that decision, we might've been home. There's that story problem to me. I felt like, God, Neelix, I'm just vomiting all this out, but like Neelix giving up his whole undercover mission so easily is a huge hit to him as a hero. Like, how can he ever be a hero again? Yeah. He's had this moment where he just like spit everything out instead of trying in a heroic way to accomplish his mission. I thought that was a huge mistake. I don't know. I could go on and on. This is why I gave it a two out of 10.
Wow. You just jumped the gun and jumped all over this episode. There's no chronological order to this.
No.
We're just going to jump all over the place.
Just had to spit it all out. So you see,
well, to go back to your...
So you see where I'm coming from.
Yes, we see where you're coming from.
Okay.
And you know, the sages talk about exploitation begins at home, but Robbie McNeil talks about exploitation begins on the set of this episode.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. By the way, I actually befriended, I think, a couple of those background actors. I remember.
Of course, you did,
such a
Garrett.
Random.
Of course,
Robbie, this is such a random memory, but I remember at the time a friend of mine was a club promoter, and he had an evening at a club on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles in Hollywood, West Hollywood actually. And I was helping him out. So I invited them to come to that evening, and I was at the door, and it was just so hectic. Like all these people were trying to get in. And then, I don't know, a couple hours after I was standing out there, two of the gals showed up and they were like, hey, Garrett. I'm like, oh yeah, hey. But I was just so stressed out because people were just, you know, tugging at your coattails basically.
Yeah.
But I do remember befriending at least two of them, but I never dated them. It was not an Akrotirion thing.
It was not an Akrotirion. Would never do that.
No.
Which is coming up soon, by the way.
Coming up soon. It is. Okay. So we go to the briefing room.
Yes.
And we learn about this wormhole that 7 years ago, the Starship Enterprise hosted negotiations for ownership of the Barzon wormhole. And to me, I started thinking, that's crazy. Like that they would actually sell the rights to a wormhole. Is this status quo?
Is this something that's commonplace? It doesn't sound like Starfleet. It doesn't sound like something we would have done. I'm sure the writers have some reasoning why they came up with this story, but it just, yeah. already it all sounds like we're making crap up a little bit, just to kind of give us an excuse to have some Ferengi in the Delta Quadrant. We're sort of bending rules and making crap up. I've never seen Starfleet auction off parts of space, ever.
It just made me think about maybe like an HGTV show about, you know, remodeling wormholes or something. It's just buying wormholes and flipping them. You know, it's like, okay, weird. I just didn't think that was
Starfleet would auction something for profit. That sounds like a Ferengi thing to do, but not a Starfleet thing. They're about treaties and agreements and respect and all that stuff.
But still, it's still bizarre that you could have ownership of a wormhole. I mean, it's so that concept is so foreign and so bizarre to me.
But yet we have, you know, it's a path through space. But yet on planet Earth, we own roads, like private roads and private land.
That's
so
true. I guess you could. Right. That makes sense.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tuvok objects to the interference, saying that it's mm-hmm. in direct opposition mm-hmm. To Starfleet protocol. Mm-hmm. We cannot interfere. We can't deal with this. Janeway then comes up with her reasoning, which you object to, which is since Starfleet was supposedly hosting the negotiations for the ownership of this wormhole, we are directly responsible for these Ferengi being shot into the Delta Quadrant, and that we need to take care of this situation, which everyone agrees to. Nobody objects to that other than Tuvok.
But even Tuvok says your logic is sound. Yeah, or something. I don't agree. The logic is sound. I think it's twisted, and at least the Ferengi have the commentaries and judgments from the rules of acquisition to turn to. Like, we didn't have a book of Starfleet protocol to say, are we responsible or not?
No.
Just whatever she says goes. So
no, exactly. Yeah. We go back down to the palatial temple, and Arador and Cole are upset about the prophets being down from the Gna province. We finally learn Rob LaBelle has a name. His name is Kafar, which, if you take the first letter K and change it to a J, now Jafar is a character from Aladdin. So mm-hmm. it's sort of, there's a lot of Aladdin going on.
Yep.
Yeah. Look at the shoes that Cole and Arador are wearing, that kind of upward twisty sort of Aladdin-esque type of mm-hmm. Shoe wear. It's just so many little references I felt to mm-hmm. Aladdin. We go to the transporter room and we basically have transported these two Ferengi up to Voyager. They're freaking out. They're like, what's going on? We explained to them that we're taking them back to the Alpha Quadrant, and we're going to bombard the local subspace instability with Verderon particles. And this is how we're going to attract the wormhole back to us. It should reappear mm-hmm. because of that. But then, of course, the Ferengis then start complaining. And their argument is, what happens to a people when they lose their gods? Despair, fear, confusion. You're going to leave them with darkness, doubt, and hopelessness if you take us. So Janeway's like, you're right. We'll let you go. But unbeknownst to the Ferengi, we are hatching a plan to make it more profitable to leave, or as Janeway says, less profitable to stay. And her famous word, I love that line where she says, we have to out Ferengi the Ferengi. And she does a little bit of a little eyebrow raise at the end there, mm-hmm. which was, you know, And then we're at the temple. The Ferengi have set up an ionic disruption field around the temple square mm-hmm. to prevent any unauthorized beam outs. The Grand Proxy, as played by Neelix, is now the messenger of the Grand Nagus, mm-hmm. who basically rules over all Ferengi, and he comes with the order that they must be recalled back to the Alpha Quadrant. Now,
let me ask you this. So yeah. Neelix beams down to the planet, and he has altered his appearance to look yes. like a Ferengi, and he puts on this cover, this act to act like a Ferengi. Have we done that on our show before? Have we altered anyone's appearance, any character? Like, has Janeway altered herself? I mean, maybe, you know, done her hair differently, worn different clothes, but has she? I can't think of another episode where any of our series regulars have altered their appearance. And what I'm getting at is
we did though, when? Robbie.
When?
We did. Chakotay.
What did he do?
He altered his appearance.
What
to look like a Vidian, the same one that Rob LaBelle was in.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Yeah. Isn't that funny? That look at that connection. He had to come down. Remember, he was a jailer. He was a Vidian jailer. And your point, though?
My point,
what
were you is I think that that's a very dangerous line to cross as a show because we're already in a fantastic made-up world anyway. And as soon as you start saying, oh, well, we'll just change the way Ethan Phillips looks from a Talaxian to a Ferengi and let him play this fake character, I guess I don't like it because I don't ever like when characters have to act like different people because A, it's saying that, oh, our character of Neelix is a good actor. Mm. He can go in and pretend to be somebody he's not. I just think that it's always dangerous to do like acting within acting. You know what I mean? Like Ethan is playing a character who's playing another character. It gets confusing. And then you change his whole look. I just think it makes the show in general feel like more fake when we are able just to change our appearance and pretend we're somebody else. And all of our, you know, crew members are good actors that they can just go act like whoever they want. I think it makes the whole show feel more fake. So that was one of my other problems. By the way, I was Googling, just to pause on the plot for a minute, I was Googling this episode and I saw a quote where Cliff Bohl, the director, he said, you know, I think the studio was really, or the network was really mad with me. I regret directing it so silly that I let the actors go so broad and so silly that we were trying to be funny. But I think we went too far. And I think the studio and network felt that way too. I thought that was an interesting thing to read because I agree. I think it was, maybe they thought they were being funny, but it went so broad that it wasn't even funny anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like the funniest things are things that feel true and authentic. That's when people really laugh, I think. And this didn't feel true or authentic on so many levels. It just felt too big and broad and silly. Felt silly.
Do you think he was referring to all the scenes in this? Because the only thing that I thought was super broad was that whole fight scene between Neelix and the two Ferengi. That was just like, okay.
Well, it's just
this is sort of like
silly.
You know, yeah. Three Stooges, you know, very slapstick, right?
If you think about Three Stooges and the best versions of Three Stooges, you knew they were never going to truly get hurt. But the best version was when you thought the Three Stooges were going to get hurt for a second.
Yeah.
And
then
you realize, oh my God, they're okay. And then it's even funnier because it feels like what's happening is real on some level. This just, I think Cliff's comments were his feelings that, yeah, we just let it get broad and silly and not realistic. And that was my feelings about the whole episode. With everybody, it felt that way with my performance. It felt that way with Rob LaBelle's character. I just didn't believe it. I didn't think Neelix. I love Johnny Phillips and Ethan Phillips. You know that I love him, but I didn't think this was his best work because he was having to do something that was just, you know, Neelix pretending to be a Ferengi. I don't know. It was too much.
And I do understand your concern or your dislike of characters being changed to look like a whole nother. I get that. But at least we didn't do that in every episode, right? I mean, yeah. We saw it in the Vidian episode quite a while back, mm-hmm. and now we see it here. But we don't rely upon that. And I know it's a little bit dangerous to go into that territory where you can say, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. We can mm-hmm. make you look like any species in the galaxy.
Yeah.
And that, to serve this, to make this story fit, you know, mm-hmm. to put this round peg into the square hole, we're just going to say, bam, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to look like so-and-so. Yeah. You're right. That's sort of the cop-out, the easy way of doing
yeah.
it. Right. So
by the way, when I was trying to look up a couple things about like this episode and Cliff Bowl
yeah.
and some,
yeah.
I did notice that this episode was nominated for an Emmy Award for best costume design.
Hmm.
That Bob Blackman was nominated for the undercleavage concept. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think what would have earned the costume design. It couldn't have been my hammer pants.
No, but I would say it would be Colin Arador's costume. I mean, being so yeah. elaborate and colorful and you know, extravagant look of not only Colin Arador, but yeah. also their harem.
You yeah.
know?
So yeah, it's everything. You get nominated for the whole picture from
right.
the Starfleet right. uniforms to the planet, you know, the population of the planet, the yeah. the creepy shoe guy, and the
sage, and even your hammer plant, even your hammer pants,
and my hammer pants, and the Aladdin look.
Your Aladdin look.
But I think the under cleavage concept, which I've never yeah. seen before or again, yeah. by the way,
yeah.
I think was all part of what got a costume nomination for Bob Blackman. So I thought that was interesting. Anyway, yeah. let's jump back into our plot. Where were we?
Okay,
Neelix is down on the planet pretending to be the proxy.
Right. And yep. he's, you know, he says, I'm going to go. And he says, listen, guys, you're going to have to prepare a speech to tell these people that you're leaving. So, mm-hmm. and this was the plan that was hatched in the briefing room back up on Voyager, that
yep.
you just can't snatch these people's deities away from them. We need to give them some sort of exit plan. And the best way is to have them say that they're going to be leaving. Mm-hmm. So Neelix makes the announcement. I'm going to be heading out here into the town square. And when I'm back, I'm going to review your speech. Well, the Ferengi then decide that the only way that they can, you know, save themselves is by killing the messenger, by killing the Grand Proxy / Neelix. Mm-hmm. So Neelix returns, and that is when this whole slapstick fight scene happens with the two swords that they have, they're trying to kill mm-hmm. Neelix with. And it's just, it's very broad type of, you know, comedy. And you're right. I was bummed out that Neelix gave up his cover so quickly. It was just like, okay, I'm not really who you think I am. And
yeah.
then he leaves, they kick him out. They are triumphant that they've foiled Voyager's plans yet again. But that's when, I guess, Neelix, Chakotay, and Tom Paris mm-hmm. discuss what to do. They find out that there is a holy pilgrim. They
yeah.
know that there is more.
Yes.
Songs. Yeah. In the Songs of the Sages, there's more verses which talk about not only obviously, the beginning of the Song of Sages talks about the arrival of the sages, but the end of the Song of Sages talks about the departure yes. of the sages. So this is the opportunity that they've been looking for. And Neelix basically poses as the holy pilgrim. And he gets up on the platform or on the steps of the temple, and he starts to say, hello. And then the camera pans across the town square, and never before does it look more barren. And
it's horrible.
It's like, oh my God.
People out there.
There's five people, and they're kind of sleepy, and it's later that night. And you're you know, your complaint about how sparse it looked.
Yeah.
It's definitely reinforced in that shot. I mean, that scene is just, it's ridiculous. There's nobody there.
Nobody's there.
But then, yeah, and then even when Neelix speaks, nobody responds. So it's up to you and Chakotay to sort of tell people, hey, it's the holy pilgrim. It's the holy pilgrim. So everyone starts to come over and watch. You guys then announce to Voyager to shoot out some polaron bursts to fulfill this prophecy.
Yes, because right? in the Song of the Sages, for their departure, mm-hmm. three new stars appear.
Appear, yes.
So we create the illusion of three new stars to fit into their religious and, you know, spiritual correct. Song of the Sages books and stories. So
correct. Yeah,
the stars appear, and then they decide, okay, we got to send them home on a, Wings of fire. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, this is going to go bad. So they start to tie them up and build a bonfire, and they're going to burn them alive.
Burned at the stake.
Burned at the stake. So Paris and Chakotay run up in the midst of all this chaos. Right there by the guys tied up, which, again, it just felt like cheesy and poorly staged, maybe, and directed and maybe written. I don't know. It just felt silly. let's go inside and turn off the things that are blocking us from what's it called? It was preventing us from beaming back, the polaron blocker.
It's like a dampening
field or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we go in and Chakotay shoots his phaser, which, by the way, we've had phasers this whole time. Like, why don't we just stun the guys and drag them home? Like, really? We've had phasers? Like, oh my God. It's a silly episode. 2 out of 10. I'm telling you.
Neelix could have stunned them when he was in there just as a guest.
Stun them and drag them home.
Yeah, that could have happened.
Oh my God.
So everyone gets beamed back up to Voyager. And now we have scenes that jump back and forth between the transporter room and the bridge. There's a security detail waiting. Ensign Murphy.
Yes.
Ensign Murphy is played by a background actor. I don't know his name, but
he is
the one person I always say that blonde people look good in the gold uniform because he's blonde and that gold really kind of.
I go with the darker complexion, the olive skin, the warmer skin, the darker hair.
No,
I think looks great with the gold.
This brings up something that happened later in Voyager with Jerry Ryan. Jerry Ryan was supposed to wear the gold uniform, and she told the producers, "I'm not going to wear that. I want to be in a different color." So they put her in teal, and she's blonde. And when I talked to her about that, I'm like, why are you wearing this color? The script says you're in the gold one. She goes, oh, I'm not going to be wearing that puke yellow because she's noticing what it looked like on me. And the gold doesn't look that good on Asians, but the gold looks great on blonde Caucasians. And so she really missed out on looking fabulous because of how it looked.
Gold looks great on like olive skin. Anyway.
Okay.
I got to wear red, dude. So
red's good though. I think red's really
red's
good.
Okay. Let's go to Murphy.
I want
to
say
gets outmanned by the Ferengi. The two,
but it's not just Murphy. This Murphy and an Asian security detail guy. That's the first time I've seen that background guy.
Oh,
and they don't mention him again because they say Ensign Murphy was found unconscious.
Yeah.
What about the other guy?
You know
right?
why they don't mention them again? Because those two little Ferengi took out a professional security detail. Two unarmed Ferengi took him out, jumped on a shuttle, a Ferengi shuttle, which, by the way, can we say that may have been the worst set I've ever seen on our show? The Ferengi shuttle interior was so bad. It was like they took two little half globes, painted, set them on the top of a crappy counter. The background looked horrible. It was bad. It was just on every level, I think. I'm sorry, you know, and some of the fans are saying to me, like, oh, you're just being nice to all the episodes. You really always say nice things about this one stunk. And by the way,
Robbie has not pulled a punch on this one at all.
And by the way, I love Leslie Jordan. When I saw, oh my God, Leslie Jordan's in this episode. I love Leslie Jordan. He plays Erador in this episode. When I first saw Leslie Jordan, by the way, follow his Instagram. His Instagram movies are hilarious. His clips are hilarious. He was on Will and Grace. I mean, you know, everybody knows Leslie.
Oh, okay.
He's short. Okay. He's flamboyant. He's hilarious. He's smart. He's funny. When I saw his name, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be great.
Right.
Even Leslie Jordan wasn't, it just didn't work. And I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
The set. This Ferengi shuttle set. Oh my God.
What do you think they could have done with that set, with the Ferengi shuttle set
burned it? It was horrible. It didn't need to be as big or like, usually here's my advice to filmmakers out there. When you don't have enough money to do it right, tighten up your shot. Just make your shot tighter.
Right.
The tighter your shot, the less you'll need, the more mystery behind the actors.
Yeah.
I would have tightened up the shot if I were Cliff Bowl. I would have tightened up the shot out in that marketplace where you don't have enough of a set. You don't have enough extras. tighten up the shot. Yeah. You don't have the proper environment that's really finished and up to the quality. So don't show it.
Yeah.
You know, go in tighter. It was bad.
Less is more.
Yes.
Less is more.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So now, you know, we try to beam the frame. We try to tractor beam them.
Yes.
We try to tractor beam the shuttle back. Doesn't work. Then Janeway asks Harry to beam the Ferengi back to Voyager. But then the Ferengi counter. Their chess move is to send out a graviton pulse, which basically stops the transporter from transporting them back. But it also sort of screwed everything up with the wormhole. The graviton pulse then basically attracted the Ferengi shuttle into the wormhole. And it also knocked the wormhole completely off of its subspace axis. Mm-hmm. Now it's jumping erratically on both ends. On both ends. So it's not static in the Alpha Quadrant anymore, the other end. So now the question is, what happened to those Ferengi? They could have been tossed anywhere. Right? So anyway, they could be in fluidic space.
Yeah.
And Janeway says, options? And Kim sits there and very ominously says, there are none. And we realize we're screwed. We could have gotten home. We were that close.
That's what I'm saying. Garrett, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Janeway twisted the logic to stick us around to deal with these Ferengis when Prime Directive says this is a planet with their own beliefs and they're going to work it out. They're going to figure it. Yeah. Maybe they would have learned a lesson if we had not tried to shoot fake photon bursts to create fake stars and trick them, because that's really what we did. We tricked them. Maybe they would have learned their lesson that their song of sages was a fiction, and maybe they should stop believing in that fantasy, and they would have learned the lesson, but we prevented them from learning their lesson that they should have learned, I guess, because we tricked them. So, and we could have gotten home. So I give this a big thumbs down.
Okay. Well, we all know how you feel about this episode.
You're
probably going to rename this episode. You wouldn't even call it False Prophets. You would just call it Skirting the Prime Directive.
That's right. Thumbs down.
Thumbs down on this app.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your theme from this all? What's your lesson? Do not film this episode.
Yes. My lesson is just don't film it. My lesson for this episode is I wrote down magical thinking can make people do crazy things. But like the beliefs that this planet, these people had, made them excuse horrible, you know, exploitation starts at home. Like that's insanity. Why would you exploit your own family unless you have some magical thinking that's going to make you, okay, well, these are prophets. I guess I should. Yeah. Magical thinking can make people do crazy things. That would be my theme for this.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. That's a lesson.
That's good.
Yeah, what's your theme?
If I have a theme for this episode, you know, I was thinking like along the lines of, you know, I mean, what is the allegory here? Is there an allegory? I mean, clearly these Ferengi have taken advantage of these people to the point where, you know, they are living off the high hog and everyone else is just in a state of poverty, really. And, you know, I just wonder if, you know, the theme here is sort of like not having a caste system or not having, or in knowing that when you have one group that has all the power that, you know, who does that serve? Mm-hmm. It serves nobody except for that one group that has all the power, basically. And you know, in the society that we live in now, the world that we live in now, it is becoming kind of like this episode in terms of, you know, the uber rich keep getting richer, you know, so the Bezos is out there, the Jobs, the Steve Jobs out there in the world, their wealth just keeps increasing exponentially. And there's such a huge divide between the uber wealthy in America and the people just trying to make ends meet month to month.
You know, look, And in the end, this was just a big con game by these two Ferengi who were just mm-hmm. exploiting everybody.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. everybody on this planet had nothing. Yeah. They were,
yeah.
you know, desperate for shoes. They were desperate yeah. for just food to feed their family. So, yeah, you're right. Yeah. The gap between the haves and the have-nots in this episode was clearly extraordinary, the gap.
Maybe the lesson is not to follow blindly, to do your due diligence. You know what I'm saying? Like someone can come out and say, hey, I'm here to tell you I have the answer for everything. Follow me. And
yeah.
people sometimes are just like, hey, we should follow him. And everyone mm-hmm. just goes in this sort of this crowd mentality of just like, yeah, let's go this way. And everyone goes that way. Mm-hmm. And then no one actually does any research into what's happening. They don't sit there
but
and
all,
say, hey.
But this episode, though, their willingness to believe started because they had a story,
right?
The Song of the Sages. They have this story that was there correct. Before,
correct?
And the Ferengi just sort of came down and exploited the story and fit into mm-hmm. the story. But if they didn't have this magical story,
yeah,
that they believe, this magical fiction that mm-hmm. they believe,
mm-hmm.
These two Ferengi would have shown up and they would have been able to have more of a sober look at like, who are you? How did you get here? Yeah. What is a wormhole? We don't understand wormholes yet, but you know, it's that magical thinking. It's the
yeah.
magical thinking is, can be, can make you do crazy things.
Yeah. By the way, one of the funnier lines. Things.
Yeah.
Very true. One of the funnier lines for me was when early in the episode,
yeah.
The one citizen comes up talking about, I'm not making ends meet as a sandal maker. I need help and this and that. And they, at the end, they basically say, they replicate a copy of the rules of acquisition. And the one Frankie, he says, replicate a copy of the rules of acquisition. Cheapest binding possible is what he said. That line, yes. cheapest binding possible is just like, oh my God, that's so Ferengi.
Yeah.
So Ferengi.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, we've come to that point where we have ended our review of this episode.
Yes, we have. We've covered it, and I'm glad to put it behind me because this was definitely not one of my favorites.
Well, I'm sure, Robbie, we're going to get some flack online. I'm sure there are some people who do enjoy this episode.
I'm sure there are.
That's
God
fine.
God bless you. Yeah. You know, everyone to each his own. And I know that, you know, we had Ferengi in the episode, and they were a very popular you know, part of Star Trek
species. Yeah.
Yeah. They were a very popular species and a very popular part of our mythology and our Star Trek world to a lot of people. I think there's just been better Ferengi stories and better Ferengi characters, I guess, or stories or portrayals or all. So yeah, not one of my favorite.
This may not be one of your favorites, Robbie, but next week when we review, remember, that might be one of your favorites.
That may be one of my favorites.
Never know.
I can't wait to remember.